No announcements today. Any questions or comments before we get into it?
Yeah.
Right, so it's due a week from Friday.
And does that mean they will or will not be on the
website? Will not. And that should all be updated on the website now.
When are we doing our last session?
Not this week.
Okay.
So, likely next.
Okay.
Any other questions as I try to get my HDMI to stay on? Successfully. Okay, if not, the plan today is to move into magnetic design. So we wrapped up part two of the course last class, which was focused on control. Part one was steady state modeling, efficiency and loss analysis of converters. Part two focused on control, modeling using AC small signal linearized circuits, solving transfer functions, designing compensators for good closed loop stability. Part three, we're again going to kind of shift, and now we're going to be talking about implementation of magnetics. How do you design these inductors we've been using in all of our converters? The actual physical realization, what are the things that go into that to make it capable of operating in your converter and low loss? So this will be chapters 13, 14, and 15. 13 is going to be the theory behind it. We'll do some review of basic magnetics, magnetic circuits, and analysis of magnetic components. And then chapters 14 and 15 are two kind of closed form design methods with some simplifications that can be used for different magnetic components. It's all kind of given some constraints and some approximations, what is the optimal realization of this magnetic component. And that'll carry us through the end of the semester. So before we get in, just showing some examples of physical inductors. Many different geometries, different types of materials go into both the winding and the core. Things up here, there's some kind of toroidal inductors, meaning the core itself is a toroidal shape made of some magnetic material, and then I wrap windings around it. There's no physical gap in that. This one has something known as Litz wire, which is a type of wire that eliminates some high frequency loss mechanisms in the winding. This would be some air core solenoid inductor. There's actually nothing other than the winding itself. Flux produced by that winding completes through free space. This thing is some, looks like a ETD or ER core. I've got two of these things that are shaped kind of like an E, and I bring them closer together through a solenoidal winding in the center. That creates the core. Kind of got two different toroids and almost a figure eight, and these two E's connecting together. This one would have an air gap in between, so this space would not quite touch this space. There'd be a little bit of an air gap. It would not look like, as is shown, this is an exploded view. That would be some 1 millimeter-ish kind of air gap between those two. And we'll talk about how that's used to improve saturation characteristics of the material. This would be one that you design yourself. This is the kind of thing we do in 482. You select the core. This black thing here is just a piece of plastic called a bobbin or a coil former. Wrap the number of turns you want around that. Pick the air gap. Pick the material type. Clamp that all together. Design your own magnetic component. These are PQ core and foil windings. They're just flat instead of a round conductor. These would be pre-assembled. Same kind of concept. These cores are two pieces shaped like E's that flat, winding, really hard to deal with by hand, wrap. So that's something that would be manufactured in a facility and you just buy pre-spec ones. Another solenoid to be a higher power inductor. Looks like some nanocrystalline core material, which is a more exotic material that has some favorable characteristics. This is called a U-core. Again, two pieces, like I was saying with the E-core, but they're just U-shaped. They kind of come together with some small air gap. This would be a chip inductor, might be used for point of load converters in on motherboards for computer power supplies. Typically just one turn of copper, one continuous piece of copper going through the middle of this, and then this magnetic material around it. Be a planar inductor down here. Integrated in the PCB. This green thing would be your printed circuit board, using actual traces on the circuit board to form a winding and then clamping a core into the circuit board. It can be nice and low profile and pretty easy to manufacture. You don't have to wind something yourself. It's all part of the circuit board and you just clamp a core on it. This thing, in some sense an inductor, but the WPT coil, WPT being wireless power transfer. So designed to be an inductor, but to have fields that this is some core material, this is a big winding, flux goes like this, completes back through the back of this core material. And if I put another coil up here in free space, I can put it inside that flux field and transfer power. This, well, you've seen the iPhone now has this wireless charging to be the kind of thing that's installed in the transmitter and in the iPhone, having some gap in the middle. Fundamentally, just another inductor, core material winding like any other. It's just designed to operate with a big gap between the two. Okay. So just some examples, motivate, there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different freedoms that can come into play when designing inductors for power converters. Okay. So figure out how to tackle this. We're going to jump into chapter 13, start with today reviewing magnetics and then getting into modeling slightly more complex magnetic components, and then talk about loss mechanisms, combining some of our modeling of magnetics at a physical level with modeling of different loss mechanisms. We'll come up with ways to kind of step-by-step design these components so that we achieve what we want in terms of inductance and current rating while minimizing the losses that it's going to exhibit in our circuit. Okay, so we're going to start with some fields review. And gradually over the next few slides, transition from where we are perhaps most comfortable at the moment. Over here, working with electric circuits, over into the magnetic domain. So this chart is showing kind of the relationships between four different sets of quantities. Over here in the electric domain, we have voltage, and kind of as it comes from electric field, voltage being the integral along an electric field, and then current, and J of T, which is current density. And over here in the magnetic domain, we have B of T, which is flux density, and B, flux, H of T is our field intensity. And the script F, which is our magnetomotor force, or MMF. And we have relationships that can go between any of these different corners of my square here. Simple one we've worked with extensively. So going between voltage and current is going to be a relationship, which is just Ohm's law extended more broadly from V is equal to IR to V is equal to IZ for any given impedance. Should give us things like for an inductor, V is equal to L di dt, impedance is SL, and S is the derivative operator. Okay. Then to get over into the magnetic domain, what we have is Faraday's law and Ampere's law. Review those quickly. So Faraday's law tells me that contour integral of electric field dl is equal to a surface integral of time derivative of magnetic field dA in its general form. Okay, so if I have some electric field present. This is talking about contour and surface integrals. So if I have some arbitrary contour C, S is the surface enclosed by that contour. Faraday's law tells me if I do the line integral along this green contour of the electric field, along any closed contour, then the surface integral of the enclosed surface, integrating the time derivative of flux density, that integral is equal. Okay. That's the general form. We will make some simplifications, assuming uniform field and assuming we're not talking about arbitrary contours. What we're going to be talking about is turns of windings and inductors. We'll just keep the general form there for the moment. Okay. That gets me a relationship between electric field and flux density. Ampere's law, another contour integral, surface integral, that the contour integral of H dl is equal to surface integral of J dA. So if I integrate the field intensity around some closed contour, what I get is surface integral of the current density flowing through that contour. Okay. And the last one over here in the magnetic domain, linking between flux and MMF, or flux density and field intensity, are core characteristics, which is going to be physical properties of whatever material the fields are in. Okay. In this case, we relate them just to something as simple as Ohm's law. We're going to have is that B of T, my flux density, is a mu times H of T, where mu is the permeability of the core. Or the permeability of whatever material we're talking about, whatever material these fields are in. Okay. So, in order to analyze these magnetic components, typically to this point when we have an inductor in circuit, we just use kind of our electric equation. Let's say V is equal to LVI dt, and we analyze, and that's fine for the circuit analysis. If we want to analyze this thing with some insight into how it's behaving physically, okay, is it going to have issues with too high of a flux density, or what are the losses going to look like? We're instead going to take a path where we go through Faraday's law, core characteristics, and Ampere's law to describe those same behaviors. We'll end up with V is equal to LDI dt, but we'll gain insight into how that inductance depends on the physical behavior of the circuit. Okay. So that's the goal. We're going to use kind of all arms of our square here. We get into it. I'm going to just kind of review some of these things to make sure we understand some electric magnetic duals, review the electric and show how it ties to the magnetic domain. So, electric over here, magnetic over here. So working with these kind of basic things, how does the electric field work? I'm going to talk about some electric field here. Draw that field as some vector field pointing arbitrarily to the right. I'm talking about some space where there is an applied electric field across this space. So if I start at some point x1 and move to some point x2, if I move on a path like this, call this path L1, then the integral of the electric field, oops, not a closed contour, along that path L1 is equal to the voltage between these two points. Right. Integrate along an electric field, what I get is the potential between those two. Electric field is a conservative field. So if I integrate it along some different path, L2, some other path, L3, I'd still get the same thing. So any integral between these two points is going to give me the potential difference between them. Let me say instead of L1, this is Lx, any L, or just any integral between x1 and x2. Over in the magnetic domain, we're going to have the same thing for the H field. If I have some given H field, two arbitrary points between it, x1, x2, no matter what path I take, what I have is the integral x1 to x2 of the H field dl is equal to, in this case, I am MMF. So this is my script F. Okay. So this kind of implies that I have some duals here where E is a lot like H. V is a lot like MMF. Both of these things have similar behaviors where both E and H are conservative fields. V and F are integrals to get potentials between two points within those conservative fields. Okay. We'll talk about current density and flux density, review basically what a density quantity is. So for current density, assume I have some material and some extruded rectangular shape. And this material is some conductor with a conductivity sigma. Finish the job. Give it a length L, height H, width W. This is some conductor, copper, aluminum, whatever you'd like, and I'm going to put current through it. Current I, that current flows through some ideal conductive wire till it hits this face of the material, and then flows through the material to the other face. Okay. So that current is going to somehow distribute through this material. I'm going to have a total current I, and if I slice this conductor at any point along its length, I should see that I have that total current I flowing through it. It may distribute differently, may decide to all flow right through the center, it may flow out through the corners, it may be completely uniform across this whole slice, but the total current, if I integrate over every little bit of current in there, should still be I. Okay. So if I call this X and this Y, look at Y and X from 0 to my width in the X direction, from 0 to the height, my Y direction, I should see that in here there is some current. It's distributed in some way. Maybe I did like a contour plot of it, I'd see that there's a whole lot in here, a little bit less out here, a little bit less near the corners, making up some arbitrary distribution. Okay. So this type of analysis is what leads us to define this thing, current density, J. We say this is my current density. And if I integrate up from 0 to W in the X direction, 0 to H in the Y direction, its current density, what I should get is the total current. Current density is some current per unit area, describes how this flows through the material. From the magnetic domain, if I sketch my dual, what it'll be is instead of a conductor, it'll be some magnetic material. I'll define for that magnetic material that it has, instead of conductivity, it has a mu permeability. Say this is all the same dimension, L by W by H. And what I'm going to put through it, instead of a current, is going to be a flux. I'm going to draw this as a square source with an arrow, because at this moment we don't have a symbol for a flux source, but this is some flux B. I push it through this material, same thing's going to happen, just the dual. We're going to have double integral 0 to h, 0 to w of my flux density, dy dx, is going to equal my total flux. The flux will flow through, it may divide in some uniform or non-uniform way, but at any cross-section, at any point throughout this chunk of material, if I integrate over the entire cross-section, I should get that the total flux is flowing through there. Okay. So then this gives me a couple more duals. So my current density seems a lot like flux density. Current seems a lot like flux. These are then the duals we'll leverage to be able to work with magnetic circuits, applying the same analysis techniques we do in the electric domain over in the magnetic domain, just swapping any of these duals. Okay. Last thing we'll use, just kind of write this, but if I go back and look at, okay, what's the behavior of current flowing through this conductor, solve is that, well, for any non-infinite conductivity, this is going to look like some resistance. And that resistance would be inversely proportional to the conductivity, inversely proportional to the area, h times w, and proportional to the length, l. That would be the resistance of this chunk of material. For here in the magnetic domain, we're going to define an analog known as reluctance. And I'm not good enough to draw a script R, so I draw an R with two backbones. This is resistance. This is reluctance. And we're going to have similar behavior here. It's going to be 1 over the permeability times the length divided by the area. I'm going to add one more dual here to my axis. R seems a lot like this reluctance thing. Okay, so now we can begin simplifying. So Faraday's law I wrote previously as integral around some contour, the EDL is equal to a surface integral of dB dt dA. It's general expression in integral form. What we're going to be concerned about is application of Faraday's law to things like turns of wire. And when we talk about an open turn of wire, I'm going to use the boundary of that turn of wire as my contour. See? And then the surface S is going to be the enclosed plane from that turn of wire. So under that assumption, I can simplify things a bit where the contour integral of the electric field around the turn of wire, I'm actually going to integrate the complete closed rectangle here, but in reality, I'm going to put some tiny break in it, and what I'm going to get then is the voltage across that open turn if I integrate the electric field along it. So this is going to be the voltage V of T. I'm going to call it V turn. Because pretty soon we're going to look at multiple turns of wire. I don't want to get confused with the overall voltage on the winding. So that's the voltage on one turn. I'm going to run this integral along one turn. Okay. Then the next simplification that we're going to make is the surface integral of this dB dt, my changing flux density across this entire shaded area. We'll do two things. One, so the total integral over that surface of a flux density is going to be some total flux, dV dt. If I integrate the density over some area, what I get is the total flux. Same thing we did here. If I integrate flux density across some area, I get a total amount of flux. So here I'm going to integrate the flux density's derivative across some area. So I'm going to get the derivative of some total flux. And then we're going to make an assumption. We say that the flux distribution within this shaded area is uniform, meaning that flux density is a single value everywhere. The flux flows evenly, exactly evenly through the entire area. Then we can say this integral dB dt dA just looks like the integral of some constant over an area. And then the solution of that is just that constant times the area, which is that constant times the area AC down here. Okay. So until I wrote that, the rest of this is just applying Faraday's law to a specific geometry here, a single turn of wire with some flux flowing through it. That part is an assumption now. Assuming that the flux is exactly uniform over this entire area, and that's going to be a simplifying assumption that could introduce error when we begin analyzing real circuits. Flux density is not always going to be completely uniform. It's going to be one that we'll use anyway. This is a simplifying assumption. Reason it's so useful is because it takes me from what I wrote in green to this. Instead of having to compute a contour integral and a surface integral, I have to multiply two things. That's easier for me. So here's our simplified form of Faraday's law. Again, this is voltage on one turn is equal to the area enclosed times dB dt, where flux density is assumed to be uniform. Okay. Lenz's law, I'll tell you in the middle of Lenz's law, the modification that is just the right hand rule, tells us that really the direction of the current for a given flux, if I put flux through some shorted loop here, it's going to generate a current according to the right hand rule, and that current is going to generate a counteracting flux, again according to the right hand rule. Okay. So this is just giving us directions, doesn't modify the equation part of Faraday's law. Ampere's law, again, is going to simplify. As I wrote it before, that the contour integral h dot dl is equal to a surface integral of j dA. Okay. The type of places that we are going to apply Ampere's law is when we have this sort of squared off toroidal magnetic material. This would be some chunk of magnetic material. And this is a single turn of wire going through the center of it. I have this magnetic material shaped like this, and then one turn wrapped around one side of it. So I'm going to apply Ampere's law to a contour that runs through the center of this core. So this thing here will be my contour. Along that contour, I'm going to be integrating the field intensity within the core over its entire length. And then the surface is this shaded surface. This here, my surface. On the right side, I'm going to be doing a surface integral of all of the current density flowing through that. Okay. So the right side then becomes all of the current flowing through this surface. Here, the only current is this one conductor. It goes through the surface. It has a total current I. So I integrate, get zero everywhere except within the cross section of this conductor. I integrate all over the cross section of that conductor. I get the total current through it. It should be I. So this is I of T. I'm going to write this as I enclosed, just in the note. The application of this, for this example, it's I of T. If I had 10 turns, then I'd integrate over 10 of those different turns, each having a current I of T, I'd get 10 times I of T, right? What's the total current kind of enclosed by this surface? Over on the left, we integrate the H field along this contour. We're going to make the same assumption, uniform magnetic field throughout the entire core. Then the integral of H along DL, where H is constant, is just going to be H times the length, we call LM. And that we call from our duals, the integral along any path through an H field is potential between these points via MMF. Again, this is a simplifying assumption. That allows us to get away from having to compute integrals in a 3D coordinate system. So this will be our simplified Ampere's law. We'll apply the circuit along with the simplified Faraday's law, both under the assumption of uniform fields, flux density and magnetic field intensity. We can use these simplified equations. Okay. The last one is the material characteristics. So on the left, I'm showing the characteristics of free space. The free space has a permeability mu naught, which has a value, back. 4 pi times 10 to the minus 7 henries per meter, a number that'll be good to know. Free space just has this constant permeability. So before core material, we approximate B is equal to mu H. So flux density versus field intensity on these axes, B is equal to mu H with constant mu will just look like constant slope. For a real magnetic core material, the characteristic is going to look like this, where within some limits, This has a slope mu. But if I get too high on my flux density above some limits, I'll let B sat or minus B sat. What happens is this material will saturate and that slope is going to drop significantly. Come back. So the slope in here is mu. Up here, the slope is mu naught. And I know it looks different than my free space, but the reason this is so exploded is because for a typical material, mu is somewhere between 10 to 10,000 times mu naught. The typical permeability of a magnetic core material that we'd use in an inductor may be 10,000 times larger than the permeability of free space. Okay. This up here is a phenomenon known as saturation. And if we apply too high of a flux density to the core material, that permeability will drop down to the permeability of free space. So it essentially, when we saturate, the material goes away for all intents and purposes. As if it wasn't there, the permeability drops to the permeability of free space. Okay. So this real material has saturation effects. Also has this hysteresis. My green line that I drew, just a single line. In fact, there are hysteretic effects in core material, which is why this is drawn as two different lines, where if I put a current that looks like one we'd have in our power converters, something like a triangle wave in the buck converter, was up and down, I would, instead of seeing a single line, I'd see something that moves like this. And that hysteresis is associated with a certain type of loss known as core loss. It's going to cause power loss in our magnetic materials. For the moment, we're going to ignore that. We're going to assume I can look at this just as a single line, the slope mu, as long as I'm within saturation limits, plus and minus B sat. Okay. So as long as my flux density doesn't go beyond plus and minus B sat, I'll assume that this relationship holds. It just looks like a line with slope mu. Okay. Briefly, different units for these things. We're going to use MKS units. We'll talk about flux density in Teslas, H fields in amps per meter, flux in Webers, though we likely won't quantify flux often. CGS units, we use Gauss or instead of Maxwell. We won't typically use those in this class, but from time to time, you'll find a core you want to use and the manufacturer gives its saturation flux density in Gauss. So here's a conversion to get back to Tesla. And go back to the units we like. Okay, so we're going to bring that all together now. So here is an example inductor where I've again got this squared off toroid made of some core material with the permeability mu. And then I have a turn of wire wrapped around one side of it. It's N turns. Some current flowing through it, I of t, and some voltage, V of t. As I push current through that winding, by the right-hand rule, it produces a flux, where the flux has to flow in a closed loop. So the flux is going to tend to flow through this core. The core permeability mu, if it's very high, that means that the reluctance of the core is much smaller than the reluctance of free space. Most of the flux will be contained within the core. Generally, there is kind of some flux that will do this sort of thing, flow in a closed loop that jumps out of the core instead of flowing through the longer path through it. The flux will not be uniform. As it goes through this thing, there'll be kind of some crowding around the corners. This area will be more or less zero flux. And based on that, the field intensity will be different. And there's these non-linearities associated with the core material. To make analysis of this tractable, we're going to neglect a lot of this stuff. Okay? So I'm going to make a few simplifying assumptions, some of which we kind of already applied to Ampere's and Faraday's law. My simplifying assumptions one, mu is much greater than mu naught, and flux stays entirely within the core. So I'm going to neglect any sort of flux that would do this type of path, as long as the core permeability is much higher than the permeability through air. That should be a fairly good assumption. Second, I'm going to assume the H and B fields are uniform throughout the core. B field is uniform through any cross section, like that one where core area is labeled, and H field is uniform over the length, the path around the core. And then three, I'm going to neglect nonlinearities of the core material, assume that B is equal to mu H in the core. When not saturated. What I'm going to do is I'm going to assume that it's not saturated, and then I can neglect any of this hysteresis or other nonlinearity. Then at the end, I'll go back and check, make sure it didn't saturate. With this, we can analyze this thing. Applying Faraday's and Ampere's law. So Faraday, with my simplifying assumptions, tells me voltage on a single turn is time derivative of flux density times the area of the core. The turn is equal to area of the core times dV of t dt. That's the voltage around one single turn. I have n turns, so my total voltage here on the coil is n times the voltage on a single turn. Ampere tells me that the total current enclosed when I do this contour through the center of the core is equal to H times the length of that path. Lm is the length of this red path that I drew. Magnetic path length. LM. Total current enclosed is, well, I've got N turns. Each of them has the same current, I of T. So H times LM equal to I of T. Then my core material. B is equal to mu H. And I need to make sure that the maximum value of B, maximum absolute value, is less than B sat. We'll do later. So I'm going to now plug these three box things together. Try to eliminate B and H as variables so I can get something that has I of T, V of T, and then geometrical or physical characteristics of the circuit. So what I'll do, plug in, I'm going to take Faraday's equation here. V of T is equal to N AC times the time derivative of flux density B of T. B of T is equal to mu H. H I can get from this equation. So B is equal to mu times H, where H is equal to N I of T over LM, where I forgot an N right here. Spent too much time talking about how it was N I of T but didn't write it, right? Total current enclosed, N turns, each with I of T. Okay, so now this is my equation, V is equal to all of this. I can pull all the constants out of the derivative. The only thing that's time varying is the current. What I'll get is, pull this N out, so I have N squared, AC, mu, over LM times DI DT. I as a function of time. What does this look like? Well, now I have an equation where the voltage on this winding is equal to something, has to do with number of turns, area, permeability, length, kind of physical construction of it, times DI DT. What is this thing? It's the inductance. V is equal to L di dt. So this thing behaves and it's an inductor. We'll pick up there next class, look at some of the problems with implementing it this way, some ways to improve it.